I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Dr. Eamon Shanahan. Eamon has a weekly slot on my work colleague Deirdre's radio show, Talk About. He's also one of Radio Kerry's longest contributors. I'm going to chat to Eamon and get to know his own story and what led him to being a doctor. Sit back and enjoy the show. Eamon, thanks so much for coming on today.
No problem at all. You're more than welcome. I'm delighted to be here.
How are you keeping?
I'm good. We're busy, but we're getting there.
That's the right job. After Christmas now, everything's back into the full swing.
Absolutely.
Do you want to give me just an idea, paint a picture for the listeners? I always get my guests to just give me an idea of growing up and what we were as a child and what was life like.
Okay, so fair enough. So I'm a Kerryman through and through. My father and grandfather were GPs in Farn Four before me. My mum is originally from Croom in County Limerick, but has been living in Kerry for many years at this stage. As I said, I was born and reared in Farn Four. I was actually born in Cork. I'll admit to that. But I moved back to Farn Four a couple of days later, and I was there pretty well ever since, unless I was at school or in college and so on. I am the eldest of eight. I have three brothers and four sisters, most of whom are in Munster and one further afield. I went to school in Farn Four. I went to the Knockaderry National School. And after that I went to school in Dublin for a couple of years and then came back and went to UCC where I studied medicine. Having done my 5 years in UCC, I then came back to Tralee to intern in the old county hospital. That's where Arson County is now. It's where the county council buildings are at this stage. So people of a certain generation will remember that's where the old county hospital used to be.
Slightly.
And then after that, because I decided I'd do general practice as a career, I do general practice. What I did was I went back to Cork and I joined the Cork Vocational Training Scheme in general practice. I spent 2 years working between Cork University Hospital and St. Finbarr's Hospital on the Douglas Road. And then ended up spending a year with Dr. Brian Coffey. Now, Brian, again, another Kerryman, Brian's dad would have been a county physician. I think his grandfather would have been a dispensary doctor in Farn Four. I'm very sorry to hear that Brian passed away recently, and my condolences go out to his family, to Maud, and to his children. But I spent a great year with Brian and his partners in Cathedral Road. And the reason that I was very happy to go to Cathedral Road is the Cathedral Road practice, the one at the bottom of Cathedral Road, it's at the bottom of Grand Brahar, very urban practice. And I knew that I'd probably be spending the rest of my life in a rural practice. So it was, I felt it was worthwhile and useful to spend that year there, as I said, in a very urban practice. Then I came back to Farn Four in 1986. And I joined my father in practice, and I've been there ever since.
And like you said, your mom's from Limerick. You were born in Cork, like myself. So
yeah,
we won't say
that in common. Famous.
But when you were growing up, as you said, the eldest of eight, were you into, before I suppose you knew you wanted to do medicine, were you into sports at that time or?
No, it was music. It was always music. Yeah, I mean, my dad, as older listeners will remember, was very much involved in music of various sorts. He would have been involved in... there were various musical societies in Tralee and Killarney, and they for decades would have run the various light operas, the Gilbert Sullivans and the Oscars and Hammersteins and things like that. At another stage, he was involved with a Bach festival in Killarney, and then he was the chair of the School of Music in Tralee for a number of years. So my dad was involved in music all his life. All of us were interested in music, and in fact I have two brothers who are professional musicians, Liam and John, the two boys next to me, who've been playing as professional musicians for decades. And then one of my sisters, Veronica, is a music teacher in O'Clashton, Verscane in Kinnair, and always sing. So I suppose the interest was in music. I would have played piano, I played a flute, I played organ up until leaving Sutton, and then I kind of got busy, and it's on the bucket list to go back to playing those instruments again at some stage. And that also meant that every opportunity I got, I would have been listening to music or attending gigs and things. So I would have had the good fortune to see the likes of Rory Gallagher, Thin Lizzy, The Stones, really? all the bands back in the day. Like,
that's great to look back and say you've seen them, you know.
But I've
written down here, what was the attraction becoming a GP, but what, before you say that, what was the first memory of, I suppose, medicine, knowing that your father was into medicine?
Yeah, I suppose the thing is from an early age, and I mean literally probably when I was 5 or 6 years of age, when my father was out doing house calls, I would kind of roam in the car with him. He had a variety of cars, and I would have travelled around with him in the car. As now, others of my siblings would have travelled around as well too, but I would have travelled around with him. So certainly I do remember being involved. I remember at a slightly later stage, even before I went to college, when I had my driver's license, I was driving him out to house calls and things like that. So I suppose that would have been my earliest exposure. And of course, the other thing too is that at the time, the surgery was in our house, so we had the patients coming to our front door, well, to the side door to the surgery, so that there would have been a stream of patients coming anyway.
You'd be well used to them coming. So Your grandfather started the medical practice in Farm 4, was it?
Farm 4, that's right, yeah. So my granddad was from Cass Island. There's a Shanahan shop in Cass Island. That would have been his father's shop, a man by the name of Richie Shanahan. My great-grandfather had two families. His first wife died. He had two families. And in his second family then, he had my grandfather, who was a doctor, Edmund Shanahan, known to everybody as Dr. Ned, and his brother would have been Jack Shanahan, who was the chemist. And his son Jack would have been a Dick, and his son again would have been a Jack again. So my second cousin is Jack Shanahan, the chemist in Castle Island. So that was the connection there. But my grandfather was appointed the dispensary doctor to Farm 4 in 1920. He had a bit of a schmozzle at the time, because he was involved in the War of Independence. He went to Wales, where interestingly he met with my grandmother, who again interestingly was from Coro. So as that, really? even though they met in Wales, my grandmother was from Coro, from Ballybeg.
So small, they came back to
a small world. So they came back to Farm 4 in 1921, where my grandfather was the dispensary doctor in Farm 4, and he remained the dispensary doctor in Farm 4 until he died as a relatively young man in 1954. And then my father continued in the practice in Farm 4, and he was in practice, let me take a second, until 2003. He passed away in 2013, but he was in practice until 2003. So there was so I was working with my dad from 2006 through to 1986 through to 2003. Now, my dad would have retired from practice in 1996, and he worked on for a number of years after that. But so there was an overlap there at that stage.
And do you know the way you were saying there, it's been in 1986 you started. It's great to be, you know, looking back the generations that it's been.
I suppose the thing about it is that one of the things about general practice or family medicine, as it's called in other parts of the world, is that you do look after families.
Yeah.
And so the thing is that we're in the interesting but also very privileged position that we've seen people literally from birth to death. So we've seen people all the way through, and that's the nature of general practice. So I'm looking after the children, perhaps the grandchildren, perhaps the great-grandchildren, people we would have looked after down through the generations.
Was back, say, when you're the general practice started back then, was it as common now for kind of family practices around the, I suppose, the county?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. Historically, we had inherited a system from the English, the dispensary doctor system, or what they strictly were, what they used to be, the strict title was the district medical officers. So the whole country was divided up into districts, and each district would then have had a district medical officer, and my grandfather would have been the district medical officer for Farn Four and its surrounds. The district medical officer system was changed then in 1970. The Health Act of 1970 brought it in, and that brought in the general medical services, at which stage the medical cards were introduced. Interestingly, it was called a choice of doctor scheme, and the reason for that was that up to the time that system came in 1970, people didn't have a choice as to who they could attend. Now, they could pay to see somebody, but if they wanted to see somebody for free, then they would have to go to the district medical officer, the DMO of their area. And interestingly, again, that system was administered by the county councils. So it was the county councils were running. The county councils were running it around the country, and I presume the corporations then in the various cities. So it was actually, and there was an office called the county medical officer of health. So the medical MOH would have been the person in charge of medical services, both the hospital services and the GP services in each county.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Exactly. And then, as I said, 1970, there was a Health Act brought in, which changed all of that, brought in the health boards at that stage, brought in the general GMS. Now, obviously, moving on historically then, gosh, is it 15, 20 years? I suppose it must be 20 years at this stage since the HSE was brought into existence. And the HSE in turn replaced the health boards, but the GMS, the general medical card system, is still there to this day. And interestingly, the contract that I would have been operating under, because I retired from that system just over a year ago, that contract is still the 1970 contract.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, as always, you can get me on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Dr. Eamon Shanahan. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast after the show. Or you'll be able to get this interview, as well as all the shows I've done so far, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Do you wanna explain to me and the listeners? I've written down here, you have an interest in chronic disease management and transport.
That's right, yeah.
What exactly?
Yeah, okay. Well, if I deal with the chronic disease management first, I suppose... Okay, chronic disease management is the management of conditions like asthma, chronic bronchitis, diabetes, heart disease, kidney failure, and so on and so forth. I've always had an interest in these areas, and particularly, it would have started with an interest in asthma, and it's sort of gone on from there, and I'm very interested in it. It's the practical application of medicine, and it's actually about looking after the whole person. Interestingly, in the UK, they would have had a system there called the Quality Outcome Frameworks, or QA for short, which focused on individual illnesses. Whereas, to be fair, in Ireland, they've taken a much broader view, and so they look at the person as a whole and look at the whole of their condition. And so it's a system that's been brought in the last couple of years. Its introduction was delayed by COVID, but it's in there now at this stage. And for people at the moment with medical cards, although I hope that would extend in time, of people any age who have one of these chronic medical conditions, as time goes on, the hope would be that they would be able to come in to see their general practitioner. If I could give a practical example of this, I'd say it was, gosh, around 2010 or that way, that the then chair of the Asthma Society of Ireland took the then Minister for Health, who was Mary Harney, to Finland to look at their system of health there. And in Finland for many, many years, people for probably at this age, 35 years, people who have asthma and chronic bronchitis are seen every 6 months by their GP, by their practice nurse, and indeed by their pharmacist. The interesting thing is that what they do is they ensure that the person with the asthma or the chronic bronchitis, but especially the asthmatics, literally just are taking their inhalers, nothing more complicated than that. And while it did cost a bit more in terms of the medications that people were getting, that they were getting the appropriate inhalers, which were a bit more expensive than they said the routine inhalers, the interesting thing was that it very substantially reduced the number of people requiring admission to hospital because of asthma. And indeed absence from work and from school because of asthma. But the really, really startling statistic was that they, with this system, they reduced the death rate from asthma in Finland by 90. That's 90%. 90%. On average, of one person a week dies in Ireland from asthma. Yeah, it just happens, and it's a kind of a silent epidemic in the background. So what we're trying to do is try to give people the best quality of life for the longest possible period of time, and that's not just about medication, it's about lifestyle as well. So that's the chronic disease management stuff. Okay,
and
the other one then was the transport medicine.
Yeah.
Okay, so 1969, just as I was finishing up in Farm 4 in the National School here in Knockadary, the airport was opened, or 1969-70, the airport was open. And for the first couple of years, there was a gliding club in Farm 4. My father and a couple of others, Matt Horgan and a few others, were involved in setting up a gliding club. And I trained, and I learned how to fly. So I went solo on gliders here when I was 16.
Really?
And yeah, then I flew both gliders and power aircraft for about 10 years after that. And I still have a great interest in aviation, and I try to get to air shows every so often. But it's out of that the transport medicine bit comes. So I've been an aviation medical examiner for 30 years or more. So I would do the medicals for the private pilots, for cabin crew, for air traffic controllers. I haven't done the course that would allow me to do the medicals for airline pilots, but that's an extra bit of work that I probably don't need at this stage anyway.
Probably not time either.
Yeah, and then out of that, then a number of years ago, the Royal College of Physicians ran a course on transport medicine. It mostly involved the occupational health physicians in the likes of CIE and Bus Éireann and so on and so forth. But there are a number of GPs, a number of us there as well, who would have an interest in transport medicine. So transport medicine is ensuring the fitness of people to drive. Now, the vast majority of it has to do with looking at, most of them is very, very routine. It's does a person meet the requirements that they can drive? But there are two particular situations. People may not realize, but that the legislation has been changed such that if you get the so-called Class 2 driving license, that's the one that allows you to drive buses, RTCs, and so on and so forth. The medical standard for that is actually quite high. And I suppose it does make sense because this is European standard. If you're going to be driving a bus with 66 people, or if you're driving a 40-ton RTC, you certainly do not want to suddenly lose consciousness and lose control of your vehicle, because it's bad enough you'll kill yourself, but you may well kill lots of other people besides.
It does happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And so that's the reason why the standard for ensuring that people who drive bus and RTCs, but that includes all the Class 2 vehicles, is quite high. The other group that we would look at is older people. And interestingly, the guy who's in charge of Road Transport Authority, Road Safety Authority, I should say, there is Professor Des O'Neill, and Des is a geriatrician, medicine of the elderly specialist in Tala. And he looked at them, and he brought in a specific special limited license for older people. And he made the point, and it's a very valid point, there are a lot of older people who have driven safely for 50, 60, maybe 70 years. And indeed, if you look at the accident rates, unfortunately, the accident rates are highest in young men and lowest in older people. And that's because older people tend to be very defensive about their driving. And one of the things is that what he recognises is that there are some individuals who may have difficulty with new concepts. So if you tell them about TikTok or something like that, they wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about, but that they have driven down to their local shop all their lives, all right, and they're going the same route day after day after day after day. And so there's a special license, a special conditions that you can attach to allow a person to continue to get their license, to have it renewed every year, but that they would be limited to driving during daylight hours, defined as an hour after sunrise to an hour before sunset, traveling no more than 80 kilometres an hour, and traveling no more than 50 kilometres from their home. So they're not going off strange roads in another part of the country. And this allows a number of older drivers to safely drive and continue. And that, of course, that's hugely important because that maintains their independence. Yeah. A lot of older drivers for whom they're their ability to drive is literally means their lives, and particularly in a rural county like Kerry, where we have people in the towns, we have a lot of people living up Boreens and things like that. For a number of older people, the reality is that if they can't get in their car and drive, it means they're isolated in their own homes.
That's amazing.
That's my transport medicine interest.
That's amazing. I never knew that about the aircrafts and stuff, and I'm still blown away about the statistic in Finland about 90%.
Oh, the asthma. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And that's part of the reason why so they've been talking about chronic disease management going back for a number of years. And again, there were various things that need to be put in place to get this organized, and it's all due credit to the various people involved. Funnily enough, it was a classmate of mine from UCC, Dr. Oral O'Reilly. She's a public health specialist in the Southeast, and she would have taken the lead in this for the HSE, and to be fair to her, she helped push this through. And I genuinely do believe it's going to have a positive impact on the health of a lot of people.
Absolutely. Do you know the practice in Farnforth we spoke about, there's other practices around?
Oh yeah.
Around what is, would Farnforth be like the main, like the kind of headquarter?
Well, no. I mean, to be fair, I mean, like, the thing is that there are many colleagues in Castile and Killarney and Tralee and in further afield, and like, we all do the best we can. We're all mad busy, and I suppose, yeah. Unfortunately, one of the sad facts of life at the moment, Ian, is that due to the pressure of work, the reality is that routine appointments have now gone out to 2 or 3 weeks. Unfortunately, for the first time ever, we have waiting lists for patients to see us in our own surgeries. That's literally just due to the pressure of work. I suppose the irony is that at a time when people are generally healthy and demonstrably are living longer, the difficulty is that for a variety of reasons, people have worries about their health. Now, COVID didn't help, certainly there's no question about that, and there have been a lot of worries, but there are a lot of people who are coming to us who need appropriate assurance. In other words, they're actually healthy and they're doing okay, but they need to be assured that they're okay, and they're coming along for that reason. And that's part of the balance that, I suppose, for me, one of the things is, how do we inform and educate people about how to recognize that they actually are healthy in themselves, but also what are the things they can do themselves in terms of their own health if they are finding themselves not right. And again, it's about trying to build in resilience and helping people to cope with less serious illnesses, let's put it that way.
Did you find since the pandemic that people are kind of, say they have a bad cough, that they're second guessing and they want to comfort
the surgery? Some people are, to be fair. And I think the thing is that to a certain extent, this though is a reflection of the experiences they would have had during COVID. Nearly everybody in the country has had COVID at this stage. Nearly everybody has. And some people have had a bad experience of COVID. So not surprisingly, once you've had your bad experience, a bad health experience, be it for yourself personally or for a family member or a child, then you're going to be extra cautious and careful the next time around. So that could be part of the reason why people are being extra cautious and careful. But there's no question about it, but that compared with 3-4 years ago, and this is not just us, it just, the numbers have exploded and we're just seeing a lot more people.
It is, and that kind of includes in the overcrowding and, you know.
And in fairness, I suppose you've hit on an important point there, and if I just finish up with this point, is the mental health aspect, is that lots of people have mental health issues and there's a lot of stress out there, and that then spills over into physical health.
That was actually my next question about people these days, especially in young people. I suppose mental health and depression, would it be one of the leading things these days with people?
Anxiety and depression. Okay, depression is certainly something you will see, and there's no question, but there's a lot of that around. But there's a lot of anxiety there as well too, and people really just not being able to cope. And people are being very stressed. There are huge pressures on individuals. Some people do seem to have coping skills, although I'll argue that you put anybody under enough stress and they'll come asunder. But more people seem to have difficulties coping with what you might consider relatively mild degrees of stress, and yet they find huge difficulties. But it's all about context, and it's all about the individual, it's all about their own particular, who they are, where they're from, what kind of support structures they have, and so on and so forth.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry. Lots more to come. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Dr. Eamon Shanahan. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast after the show, or you'll be able to get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Obviously, all the listeners that are regular listeners into Radio Kerry know that you're on with Deirdre. How long have you been on with Deirdre altogether?
Well, with Deirdre herself, she'd have to answer that one for you. I think the answer is however long Deirdre has been
on Radio Kerry.
I'm trying to think of his name. He was a Mr. Collins. I can't remember his first name. He was the first manager of Radio Kerry. So Radio Kerry, correct me if I'm wrong, started broadcasting, I think, in 1991, I think.
Yeah.
I think 6 months later, I started doing the radio slot. So I've been doing it since about 6 months after Radio Kerry started. So over 30 years at it now.
Has it always been the same time slot?
Thereabouts, yeah, kind of meandered around a bit, but it's kind of settled down to the 2 o'clock on a Wednesday now for the last, I'd say, a decade or more.
I was talking to Fiona and I was saying, I'm going to ask you, what would be one of the most, I suppose, maddest things people have rang in about that? Kind of, even yourself, you kind of sit back and scratch your head.
Yeah, I suppose one of the things that would slightly worry me is that people ring up or text us in, which is usually the case, and you'd be, Deirdre and myself, is going to say, why are you contacting us? So people with clearly very serious conditions, horrible crushing chest pain or lots of bleeding from the bowel, or, you know, things that are to even the layperson are what we would call an alarm signal that clearly the person has potentially a very serious illness. Why are they ringing me, and why are they not going and seeking the appropriate proper help? I suppose the thing is that the ethos, and Deirdre myself would share this, is that what we're trying to do is we're trying to educate and inform. Yes, we will address specific topics, but the purpose of the exercise, and what I'll always try to do, is expand from the specific to the general, so as that people have a better understanding. And that to me is hugely important. Anybody who knows me and sees me, they'll know that I do spend time trying to explain to people, giving them instruction, advising them verbally, but also giving them written instruction. I keep referring to a variety of really good websites where people can go and get good quality information about their health. As I said, the old cliche about the second most Googled subject is health. And the thing is that there's a lot of information out there, but some of the information is really dubious and very poor quality. So I try to point people in the direction of good quality advice about how to look after themselves. So it's all about self-care.
Would you agree? Because when I had my accident and been in hospital there, when I got the clot, and they told me, and every doctor I've met since my accident, and I'm sure he will be the same, they always say, don't look it up on Google, because they'll tell you you only have 10 minutes to live.
And that can be the difficulty. Obviously, the problem is that human nature being what it is, and it goes back to the point we were making earlier on about the anxiety and the depression, we are wired to be anxious. Now, what I mean to say about that is that for so long, humans were at the bottom of the food chain, right? And I mean, when you think about it, it's only in the relatively last, 5,000 years or something that we've begun to move up the food chain. So we're the apex predators at this stage. Before this, and for the rest of humankind, going back for tens of thousands of years, we were the bottom of the food chain. So we're physically and physiologically wired to be anxious creatures, and therefore when we look at something, we do the maths, which are 2 + 2 = 1,000,000. All right, so it's the nature of human nature is always to catastrophize, to look at something and say, oh my god, X, Y, and Z. So I suppose part of our job goes back to what I was saying earlier on, is to try to give, to appropriately assure people. Now, sometimes I'll see people and say, look, I can't assure you that I do have concerns or worries about this condition for you myself, and we do need to get this checked out further. But I would hope that there, the majority of times, that I can assure people and say to them, look, yes, I know you've got these worries, but no, you're not going to come to any harm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can share that as well. Like, I'm the biggest overthinker you could meet. I overthink absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Like we were saying there about looking it up online and stuff. Say, do you know, I believe, were you involved in, I don't know, I was reading up there a few weeks ago, were you involved with South Dock there, going back?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been a member of SOTOC since SOTOC was established.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think SOTOC came into existence in 2000, and SOTOC was revolutionary in the sense that for the first time ever, We had a doctor's cooperative that allowed doctors, much better time off. Before the co-op came into existence, we would have had local doctors' rotas, but some of these rotas were quite small. And indeed, there were a lot of GPs, particularly rural GPs, who were essentially on one-on-ones. They're working 24/7. Now, all right, they weren't being called out every night, but they could potentially. And I suppose one of the things is that before the co-op, I had the phone beside the bed, and I was always in fear and dread going to sleep that the phone's going to ring and I'd have to go out in the middle of the night. And that doesn't happen anymore at all. So the co-op, and I mean, I think it's an important point, and as Dr. Gary Stack and myself said this every Christmas, South Dock is an out-of-hours urgent medical service. We're not a trauma service. We're not an emergency service. We're there to provide medical advice to people. I did my shift last night in Killarney with my colleague, Dr. Myrne Kwan, and the two of us, we saw a fair number of people last night. But to be fair, all the people that came, it was appropriate because they had sickness and illness, and we were able to hopefully deal with them that way.
Yeah. Do you think it's important to build up, like you said, assuring people? Do you think it's important to build up a level of trust between you and the client?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is a very long... I said this with all due deference to my hospital colleagues. In the hospital, the conditions stay the same. So if you're a bowel surgeon, you see bowel problems. The patients come and go. In general practice, it's the patients stay the same and the conditions come and go. So there is a longitudinality to what we do. But I think the other bit of it as well too, and we alluded to it previously, is the family medicine side of it. It's the fact that we can place the person within the context of their own individual immediate family, their extended family, and indeed in their community. And that has a huge bearing on the person's health. And I mean, there is an increasing recognition of the role that hereditary and inheritance it has on an individual's health, where there are specific and particular illnesses in certain families, you need to be taking extra precautions as a consequence. Now, if somebody rocks up now, and I have no particular issue if somebody has the head cold and they want to get seen by a doctor on call or an out of hour service or a telephone service, that's grand. But it's the long term relationship is the thing that you would foster. And to be fair, I think most people in this part of the world at least do have their own family doctor with whom they do develop that relationship over time.
One of the last questions I want to ask you is, I wanted to say, do you know movies, because I'm absolutely fascinated by, say, Chicago Med and Grey's Anatomy and stuff, do they paint a totally different picture to what medical and medicine is really
so there are a couple of things there. Obviously the what drives it is there something that will attract the viewer to come back and see it again? And no more so than any other soap. I mean, if you look at I think it was British Medical Journal, looked at something like Carnation Street and looked at the number of deaths and suicides, and they were sort of completely out of as order with regard to the general population. And to a certain extent, there's a certain amount of that with the hospital medicine as well. Some of the better series do stick to, they do have medical advisors and so on, but there is a degree of artificiality. I think one of the things that we need to be conscious of is that compared with 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, there have been enormous advances made in medicine. But we also need to recognize the limitations of technology. We also need to recognize the limitations of the treatments that are available to us. And as things go on, things will improve. I've no doubt about that. But I think that it's also important that people have be given realistic expectations of what can be achieved and what can be done, what can't be done.
Now we're going to go for our last ad break. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry. Lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, the last part of the show. I wanted to say, do you know the likes of basic CPR and stuff? Do you find that in general? Because I was talking to one of my action nurses when I was in hospital. They were saying that, especially men in general, would they be slower going to a GP if there was something wrong than women.
I mean that can be a problem. Now, to be fair, I think that's beginning to change, and I think, to be fair, there's a generational shift there that younger men are more inclined to come forward and get themselves checked out. I think, again, there's a balance that needs to be struck there, in the sense that you can genuinely have yourself overchecked and you can drive yourself mad with checking and checking and checking and checking, but it's important that people know a couple of statistics, like what's their height, what's their weight, what their blood sugars, what their cholesterol levels, like, once. But they don't need to keep checking every 6 months.
Yeah.
It's about awareness of yourself and your own body. A lot of illnesses in modern society are lifestyle related, and unfortunately, I think what we're ending up doing, and I'm a bit uncomfortable about it, is that we're using pharmacology to deal with the problems with lifestyle. Now, what I mean to say by that is, you know, lack of exercise. The fact that we, as a race, are eating vastly more calories than we did before, and now we're resorting to medications to try and deal with that. And it's a societal thing. In other words, that it's not so much what I do with my individual patients, it's what society does as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay, things like childhood obesity and trying to prevent children getting fat in the first place, because that has an impact on the rest of their lives, you know, this kind of stuff. And that's a societal thing. That's not something any individual can sort out.
Yeah. The fact that we were talking about GPs there and general practice, is it true? I don't know where I read this before, but is it true, one thing, GPs in the UK, they don't provide paediatric care?
No, not so much in the UK, but go further afield. To a certain extent, you're right. There are some GPs in the UK who may not be providing the full range of paediatric services. Certainly, if you go to Spain, for example, GPs don't see anybody under the age of 16. Well, in Spain, what they have is they have primary care paediatricians, so they've got doctors who do nothing else except look after children. Ireland is relatively unique, but to a certain extent, it shares in common with Scandinavia the fact that we do look after people from cradle to grave. So I'm saying, mums who are pregnant, I'll see their newborn babies, I'll see their children as they grow up, I'll see these children as they grow into adult life, and then I'll see those adults going into older people throughout. So I mean, one of the things that's unique about our general practice is the longitudinality, so we see everybody literally from cradle to grave.
So I never knew that there's actually ones out there that just specifically are for paediatric care.
Was
that ever the case in Ireland, or have GPs?
No, it's always been general practice, and I think that's something that both the profession wants to hold on to, and I think, to be fair, I think that's what the health authorities want to hold on to. They do recognise the fact that our general practitioners do provide the breadth of services, and they would be loath to lose that.
Yeah. My last question is, not when you started, but even going back 7, 8, 10 years ago, compared to Ireland and America, like, America is obviously that bit more advanced in medicine and with equipment.
Yeah.
Have you seen a massive improvement in Ireland since the last 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, they've been probably the one that I've seen the biggest change in are survival rates from cancer. What strikes me very forcibly are the number of my patients who are now living with cancer, not living badly, living well with cancer. In other words, they have a diagnosis of cancer and they're doing extremely well and have good quality of life. And that's probably been the biggest change. Interestingly, you're talking about America. The reality is, America's a great place to go for the best of healthcare if you have the money.
Yeah,
but about 30 or 40 million Americans have no health insurance and therefore don't have access to even the most basic of healthcare.
It's mad, isn't it? You know, just like that.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
Eamon, thanks so much for me on today now, and I really appreciate it. I hope Deirdre Walsh isn't mad at me robbing you on
me. I hope not. I doubt it. Knowing Deirdre, she won. She's so good.
You can start her out. Tell her that. Eamon, thanks so much. All right.
Good luck to you. Take care.
All right. Now, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in to me as always. A massive thanks to Eamon for coming on to share his story. It was interesting to see his life outside, I suppose. Well, we also talked about his life as a doctor, but it was interesting to talk to him about growing up and stuff and life outside being a doctor, because I think a lot of people that listen into Radio Kerry, and especially to Deirdre Walsh's show, talk about, they know him from being a doctor instead of, I suppose, his own self. So it was interesting to peel back a few layers and see what his life is really like. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, drop me a message on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie, or drop me an Instagram message. Just search for enoconnell321. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9pm. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
Stand Out with Enoconnell on Radio Kerry.